we hope this new law will give the additional resources to make that work. Is it enough to get to where we need to go? That's a question for the court. And I think many schools would say to really be where we need to be, this probably isn't enough.
Well, after months and months of debate, it finally happened. The Kansas legislature passed a school funding plan, albeit a flawed one. Not long after lawmakers left town for a three-week spring break, it was discovered that the bill is about $80 million short of the roughly $500 million in new funding it was supposed to provide. It's a drafting error that lawmakers will have to fix when they return at the end of the month for a brief wrap-up to their 2018 session. Assuming that happens, the question will be, is the additional funding, when added to last year's $300 million increase and spread out over 5 years, enough to satisfy the court? I'm Jim McLean. On this episode of Statehouse Blend, Kansas, we're going to revisit the final hours of the legislature's regular session, dig into the latest school funding plan, and talk to one expert who says the debate that everyone wants to be over might not be. I'm joined by my Kansas News Service colleagues, Stephen Caranda and Celia Yopis Jepson. I think it's fair to say that we witnessed what amounted to a legislative game of chicken. The Senate spent virtually all of that last day debating a tax bill. As a result, the session almost shut down before lawmakers could pass the school funding bill needed to respond to a Kansas Supreme Court order. And that, says House Minority Leader Jim Ward, would have been a disaster.
Today was the most bizarre day. We were 90 seconds from melting down the entire session.
So, yeah, the House and Senate came into that final day with two very different approaches to ending years of litigation over school finance. In the end, which approach prevailed?
The House wanted more than $500 million for schools, and the Senate was looking at a bill that was half as much money. So in the end, what happened is the House basically, I mean, it was a big win for the House. The House got what it wanted. They got more than $500 million. They retained parts of the formula that they really wanted that give extra money to small, to very small and very large districts. And they made relatively small concessions to include Senate policies.
There's some tension around that on the final day between the two chambers.
Yeah, you could say that even within the chambers, because there are Democrats who feel like this is not enough money to satisfy the court, and Kansas is going to end up, the legislature is going to end up back at their desks in July trying to fix the problem again. And then there were members on the other side of the spectrum who are very concerned Kansas cannot afford this bill. This is going to lead to tax hikes. Now, the governor says that Kansas can afford it, and he was urging them to get their work done, send the $500 million bill to his desk. And the Attorney General, Derek Schmidt, was also urging the legislature to get things done now.
Stephen Caranda, the big problem here procedurally was they didn't have their work done with a very hard deadline in front of them. And they came within, literally, as we heard Representative Ward say, seconds of letting all this work expire. Why did they have such a hard time extending their session so they could get their work done?
So this is a procedural move that they would do basically every year, and it's normally not a big deal. What happened this year is all the conflict between the chambers on tax legislation, on school funding issues, all those disagreements kind of trickled down, and this procedural move basically became a proxy fight where each chamber said, I don't like your adjournment resolution, I'm passing my own, and the Senate said, we're not going to pass yours, House, as the clock was ticking down. Over in the Senate side, you could really hear in Senate President Susan Wagle's voice just the tension in the air.
So if anything happens tonight, if bills are dead for some reason, it's because the House didn't pass our resolution.
And one thing I think to really note, Jim, is it wouldn't have just killed the school funding bill. There are dozens of bills that they've been working on all year on issues like compensation for people wrongly convicted of crimes, bills to release police body cam footage. Everything would have been dead.
Stephen Caranda, Governor Jeff Collier really wasn't a part of this debate until pretty much the end of the debate. He weighed in late last week and said he preferred the House plan over the Senate plan. And then he was monitoring the debate as it occurred over the weekend and making it clear that he wanted the House plan, and also making it clear that he wanted this. He did not want lawmakers to leave town without getting this done. So talk to me a little bit about Collier and how him weighing in at the time which he did, made a difference in this debate.
So I think that did help because the governor always has a good bit of power in these discussions because he has the veto pen. And you also don't want to send something to the governor on a big issue like this if you don't know it's something he likes, probably.
And we should mention in this context that, of course, Jeff Collier is running to be governor in his own right.
He
served Governor Sam Brownback for years as his lieutenant governor. And so he's running. And how do you think the governor's involvement in this might play on the campaign trail?
Well, his biggest competition in the primary, of course, is Secretary of State Kris Kobach. They're both conservatives, but Kobach criticized this plan. Him and some lawmakers have the idea that it's too much money. So I think Collier might take some heat from people like Secretary Kobach saying he endorsed this plan that they think spends too much and we might not be able to afford. But then on the flip side, there are still some Democrats and other people who say they don't know if this is enough money. So I think he might get heat from both sides on this particular vote.
In fact, let's go back to the when the Senate was debating this bill. Jim Ward, who is the minority leader who we heard from before in the Kansas House, and a lot of House Democrats didn't vote for it early in the day on that very point that they didn't think there was enough money in it. When it finally came time for the Senate vote, very late, Senator Hensley stood up and announced that he was indeed going to vote for this bill, and a lot of that wouldn't have passed absent the Democratic votes in the Senate. This school finance vote came after an all-day debate on a tax bill that would cost roughly $500 million, and a lot of the Republicans in that chamber voted for that tax bill, which passed the Senate, which is yet to get to the House. And so Senator Hensley stood up and took issue specifically with Senate President Susan Weigel, saying that her vote on the tax bill and then her explanation for not supporting the school finance bill that we couldn't afford it was hypocritical.
What she's telling me here tonight, in my opinion, is that she prefers tax cuts over funding our schools adequately. Those are the priorities that she was setting. I mean, there's a word for that. The word is hypocrisy.
It was just minutes later that Senator Weigel decided that she needed to respond, and she stood up, and this is what she had to say to Senator Hensley.
What I did tonight when I voted for that tax bill is I did the right thing. I'm here standing for all my constituents, for my teachers, my administrators, my aircraft workers, my CPAs, my healthcare workers, my hotel workers, the maids, everybody. I'm here for my whole district. I'm just not here for all the phone calls that have come in today from the teachers.
Debates get contentious a lot, but I think that kind of back and forth shows that people were really kind of at their wits' end and maybe a little more snippy than they would be during an average debate.
But Celia, again, very long day, lots of drama around the State House, and part of that was hundreds of teachers descended on the State House during the debate.
Yeah, I have to say, when you say very long day, so it was a 16-hour day that felt like a month because of the amount that happened in one day. And the whole experience was kind of surreal and visually was a little surreal when all of a sudden hundreds of teachers showed up in red shirts in the evening as this apparent filibuster was dragging on for hours and we're getting closer to midnight. We had teachers lining up outside of the Senate chamber. Paul Davis, the congressional candidate, showing up and talking to them. Now, it turns out they had a conference in Topeka, so it was just a matter of moving their activities all to the Capitol. And they wanted to send a message to lawmakers that they are serious about Kansas needing to fund its schools. Here is Karen Wilkerson, a teacher from Ulysses in Southwest Kansas.
I look at this as an investment in our future. You invest in assets all the time for your business. As Kansans, we need to invest in this for our future to be able to have our state have great employees that want to stay here and make our state really great.
Okay, so we're past this milestone. They've reached first adjournment. They come back for a very short veto session slash wrap-up session at the end of the month, only 8 days, much shorter than usual. They'll have several things to do. They'll have a lot of bills that were still undecided when they left. We mentioned them before, the telemedicine bill, which some people in the legislature went very, very badly. Some gun bills, gun control bills that are still not resolved. The bills you mentioned earlier, Stephen, about the body cams and the wrongful compensation bill. So there are still plenty of things like that left to resolve when they come back, if they have the time to do it. But the really, really big thing has now been done, which is this school finance bill, and remains to be seen whether or not it will satisfy the court. That is still the really, really big question hanging out there, Celia.
So, yes, we'll be wrapping up the veto session. We don't know if they'll be coming back in the summer. Some of the lawmakers told me they're confident this bill is going to satisfy the court, and others are very skeptical and think that we will see another highly dramatic session this summer.
Any idea when we'll hear from the court as to whether or not this is acceptable?
Well, we have the April 30th deadline to submit briefs, and then what's your guess, Celia, how long it'll take for them to make a decision?
That's a big question. In the past, they've made some decisions fairly quickly, but those decisions have usually regarded smaller pieces of the court case that are known as equity issues or equity fixes. This is the case as a whole, and that has in the past taken more months. So I'm very curious to see how fast the court can digest what's been produced here and turn around a response.
But we do expect probably to see a ruling before the school year starts, don't we? Because hanging in this all is that if they don't fix it, there's the potential for schools not to open, isn't there?
Yeah, and that really goes beyond when the school year starts. The new fiscal year starts in the middle of the summer. Superintendents have a lot of bills to pay then. Their contingency funds for paying those bills only last so long. And they have a lot of items that get done, a lot of contracts and such that get done over the summer, and teacher salaries that also get paid over the summer.
The fate of the new school funding plan, assuming lawmakers can fix a recently discovered $80 million mistake in it, is now in the hands of the Kansas Supreme Court. Many lawmakers say their latest effort addresses the issues identified by the court, but others continue to say maybe not.
Well, I think many, many people in the education community are skeptical, and I don't know whether that's based on legal analysis or simply their feeling, you know, we're far behind.
That's Mark Tallman. He's the Associate Executive Director for the Kansas Association of School Boards. He's been an education lobbyist since 1990, so he's pretty familiar with this latest case and those that preceded it. Tallman says the legislature's latest plan certainly counts as a good faith effort, but he's not convinced it provides quite enough money to satisfy the court.
I think the biggest weakness in the state's case may be that because it's phased in over 5 years, inflation is going to enroll some of that. So if there's kind of a consensus that $600 million might do it, well, this is $500 million, and maybe the court says you got pretty close, but then when you understand that there will also be some erosion to inflation, it becomes more difficult. On the other hand, what the court may be willing to do is say, all right, you've made a credible effort. We're going to acknowledge that. We are an appeal court. We are not the trial court. We don't look at facts. We look at law, and potentially say we will send this back down to the trial court to try to work through what it's done, and we will retain jurisdiction while that happens and while we see while we begin to see the impact. The other wild card, of course, is the new study that the legislature commissioned released in March that some argue would call for a significantly higher number. Now, the ambiguity there is that much higher number, the $2 billion number that is often used, is based on very ambitious and frankly unprecedented student achievement levels. It would certainly put Kansas the highest achieving state in the country, which would be fantastic, I think, from the viewpoint of the educational community and what we think of as far as our economic competitiveness. But the question is whether the court would say, okay, that's where you have to be, or whether they would accept what is almost a scale of funding based on where you want to go. In other words, what will the court say that we have set as the goals Kansas expects to be at?
If the court then started looking at the educational attainment goals in this new study, they would, in a sense, be changing the rules in mid-game here, because, you know, when they were talking about the row standards and other things, they had the school districts focused on meeting these goals. And I know these other goals that are in this latest report are very ambitious, and to some extent, ironically, once again, those goals didn't come out of nowhere. Many of them were articulated by the State Board of Education in this new aspirational program they have going. So to some degree, we only have ourselves to blame for setting these lofty targets rhetorically.
It's always great to rhetorically say, we want to be best in the country, you know, until you get the bill to do that. And, you know, my point has always been with legislators who say, you know, you schools, you're always asking for more money. When is it going to be enough? And my answer is always, when will we be satisfied with our educational outcomes? We know that we're spending enough to get the results we're getting right now. The question is, are those results good enough? And I think most people across the political spectrum would say, no, they're not. One end might say, our public schools are failing. Look how bad we're doing. The other end might say, we're doing better than we've ever done, but we need to get better. And so wherever you're coming at, very few people are saying we're happy with where we are now. The court is saying we believe that funding is a part of that. The new study unequivocally said that there is a relationship between level of funding and level of outcome. We hope this new law will give the additional resources to make that work. Is it enough to get to where we need to go? That's a question for the court. And I think many schools would say to really be where we need to be, this probably isn't enough. But if it starts us on a path and we can demonstrate the results, the public will see that. We hope that will build public support to continue.
In terms of whether or not this latest effort is going to satisfy the courts, I mean, the answer, of course, is we don't know. And what you're saying is there is a healthy degree of skepticism among those in the educational community as to whether it will quite get us there. I mean, nobody's arguing that this is not an honest, good faith effort. I mean, you know the legislative process as well as anyone, and it's a very difficult process. I sense it, and I'm sure you do, in the halls of the State House each and every day. There's a growing fatigue with this whole question. I mean, we've been at this now for decades, back and forth with the courts. Practically speaking, if this doesn't get us there, what next? Because the legislature does seem to be, if I could use the phrase, at its wit's end about this.
Well, it does, and I think one of the things we have to acknowledge is that, you know, our state is going through challenging economic times, and to some extent, you know, the country's experienced that as well. But let's take some context. Per pupil, our funding for education in Kansas is below 2009 levels when you adjust for inflation. You really have to go back to the mid-2000s to get where we are now. Number two, our level of education support compared to Kansas personal income, kind of our total income of people in the state, an economic measure, is at the lowest level it's been since the 2080s, well below the average of the last 20-some years. And we are at the lowest level compared to the national average that we've been since 1992. So while schools people are frustrated by schools asking more money, by many measures we remain historically underfunded and dropping compared to other states that we have to compete with. I think comparing Kansas to our neighboring states exactly makes the points that the states that spend the most have the best outcomes, the states that spend less than Kansas. Now, you can find a given indicator. You can find, well, on this particular test score, but if you look at not just test scores, but graduation rates, ACT scores, young adult post-secondary participation, when you measure all of those and kind of get an average, that's where you see it.
So it all goes back to your question, to the rhetorical question you posed. We need to decide here in Kansas what it is we want in terms of educational attainment and set those goals, set those bars. And then as I hear you argue it is a relatively straightforward then function to determine what it's going to take in terms of money and the way it's distributed to get us to those goals. I mean, there's no real mystery in that.
No, and there was actually a report that came out early in the session, and we've kind of done an answer to it, but we haven't fully released it yet, that really does sort of look nationally, research is becoming clearer about why there's a connection, or that there is a connection between level of funding and achievement, and why. And here's the why. It is because it is the additional resources that lets you provide additional help for kids who are not doing well. In other words, if a student has a condition of disability, just, I always say, you know, teaching harder isn't going to help. You're going to have to some way recognize the needs of that student. If you've got kids who can't do homework because they're homeless and saying, well, let's give them more homework, let's have more rigor to the system, that doesn't help. We know what helps is earlier intervention, better preschool programs, all-day kindergarten. We know that smaller class sizes and more individualized attention help.
And all those things you're saying cost money.
Exactly. And that's why the historical record is those states. So what states do better? We look at the top achieving states. What characterizes them? They spend more.
I guess in closing, I would go back to your point then, because the most common rhetorical argument against these cases, against this pushing back against these school districts and all this litigation is, quote unquote, it isn't sufficient. You don't solve problems by simply throwing money at them. And what I hear you saying is, well, yeah, you kind of do.
Well, I would say, you know, that's an easy rhetorical thing to say, but to me that's no different than saying, you know, we're just throwing money at the military to get more competitive, or we're just throwing tax cuts and we don't know what you can always use that. The reality is, I think, that Kansas has demonstrated that when it gets more money, it invests it in ways that improve student results.
Well, thanks to veteran education lobbyist Mark Tallman for sharing his perspectives with us on this critical issue, which lawmakers may or may not be close to solving. We'll, of course, keep you posted on that and dozens of other issues with which lawmakers continue to grapple. I'm Jim McLean. We really appreciate you joining our growing group of regular listeners, and we invite you to tune in again next week for another edition of Statehouse Blend, Kansas.